My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to a unique episode of the Super J-Cast, because I've not quite decided if this is Super J-Cast episode 371, or if it's Patreon bonus audio content for G1 Climax Night 3. And I think it's going to be a bit of both. No Damon here today, as you can tell. He's in Dallas at the moment, enjoying some delicious Texan barbecue. So he couldn't record today because he was far too busy eating all those delicious smoked roasted meats. And he sent me a lovely photo of himself, which I might ask if I can share on social media. Looking like a kid at Christmas. I've never seen the man this happy before. He's holding a huge slab of what I assume is some kind of rib, smoked pork rib. And there's a sausage. There's other hunks of delicious grilled meats on his plate. I'm incredibly jealous. I can always smell it and taste it just from looking at the picture. It looks smoky and succulent. Really go for a bit of Texas barbecue right now. But the upshot of that, of course, is that I'm recording by myself this week. It's been quite a day. And as I'm recording this, I am watching the extra time of the women's semi-final match with England against Italy. It's currently tied at 1-1. England nicked a last-minute equaliser. So as I'm recording, you're either going to hear me cheering with joy or lashing out with some curse words, some despairing wails and moans if Italy managed to beat England. And it also happens to be the last day of school for me. A term that's gone 2 days too long. I don't know why we had to come in this week as well. It's ridiculous. All the other schools seem to have finished last week, but there's us dragging ourselves over the finish line. Had a great day yesterday. We had our Year 6 graduation assembly, which I was in charge of, obviously, as the Year 5 and 6 teacher. And I got together all photos of the Year 6 kids throughout their time at the school, since they're in the nursery, all the way up to Year 6. Put to a backing track of Somewhere Only We Know by Keen. All the parents watching, not a dry eye in the house. I pride myself on that. And I understand. I mean, my own children, got one of them just finished reception, moving up to Year 1 next year. My son, still in preschool, so he's not going to be in reception until September 2026. I can only imagine the kind of mixed emotions that you must feel as a parent, seeing your child finish primary school and being confronted with the reality of that and seeing those images of them from when they first started, from nursery, reception, going all the way up to moving on to secondary school. It must be very bittersweet. But I did an excellent job of that, even if I say so myself. We should have just ended it there. But today, I was just in a very bad mood today. I'm very tired, grumpy, snapping at everyone. just being a general pain to be around, ruining the last day of school for everybody. It's not easy being a parent to two young children and a teacher. I spend far too much of my life around children. And I like children, don't get me wrong, but there is very little respite for me. The second I wake up, I've got to take care of my two kids, get them out of bed, brush the teeth, washed, dressed, ready for school, drive them to school, make them eat some breakfast, drop them off, and then the working day begins. My year 5-6 students come in. And then by the time I've sent them home at 3:15, then I'm daddy again. And all the full-on duties that entails. Not that I'm complaining. It's a joy. I love being a dad. I wouldn't change it for the world. But also being a co-host of this podcast just throws in another additional layer of responsibility for you listeners. But one that I take on gladly. So it's been a long day. Exhausted, get the kids home, get some dinner in them, get washed, brush teeth, pajamas, put them to bed, read the stories, tuck them in, get them off to sleep, and it's G1 time. Got to hammer out this audio. And I love doing it. We're up to night 3 so far, and those of you who got your fucking wallets out would have enjoyed the audio coverage that I provided for night 1 and night 2. Which was pretty fucking good, even if I do say so myself. I am the best at doing this. I know I've not been doing the solo audio very long, but I genuinely believe there is not another person out there who can provide the depth of coverage for New Japan Pro Wrestling that I do. No one's got the passion, the insight, the contacts, the knowledge of the business, the ability to break down and analyze a match, critique something, say why it works, why it doesn't work, from the perspective of a fan. Not someone who's dragging their feet, grumpy that it's not 2017 New Japan. Not throwing that shade at anyone in particular, but I like New Japan. And I like to think I critique it fairly and eloquently. And it's good value. I mean, $10, that's nothing. That's too cheap, if anything. It's an insult. I should be charging more. What does $10 get you these days? Not much. If you go down to the pub or a bar, how much does a pint cost these days? About that? Super J-Cast Patreon is worth more than that. So those of you who have ponied up, you would have enjoyed Nights 1 and Nights 2. I've had some nice feedback about that so far. I know it's good. You don't need to tell me. But I enjoy the head pats all the same. So what I've decided to do here, with Damon unavailable to record, I thought, well, I'll do the night 3 coverage, and I'll put that out for free. That will be the podcast episode for this week, and that will let the freeloaders have a little taste of what that solo audio sounds like. So if you're not subscribed to the Patreon, you're listening to this and agreeing correctly that this is excellent coverage, this is the best analysis that you're going to get for New Japan Pro Wrestling, then get on Patreon, get on the $10 a month feed, and you will get my coverage of every single Grade 1 Climax show this tour. It's going to be really great. So night 3, today's show comes to us from Miyagi, the Sendai Sun Plaza Hall. We had an attendance of 1,714. Now, this is an interesting choice of venue because they don't often run here. They're usually here once or twice a year, but not usually for G1 Climax shows. It's usually, you know, looking at recent years, things like Road to the New Beginning Day 3, Road to Destruction Day 4 last year, a lot of Best of the Super Junior shows. They did Day 5 Best of the Super Juniors 2 years ago. So it's a stronger number than those, which have kind of been hovering around 1,000. The last time Sendai Sun Plaza Hall was a Grade 1 Climax tour stop was in 2015. So 10 years ago, I did a much bigger number there, 800 more than tonight. It was 2,525. And that card was a singles match between Yusuke Taguchi defeating David Finlay, Yano and Yoshihashi defeating Shibata and Yohei Komatsu, Kushida and Tetsuya Naito defeating Kota Ibushi and Mascara Dorada, Bullet Club Team, AJ Styles, Bad Luck Fale, Doc Gallows and Tama Tonga defeating Captain New Japan, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Hiroshi Tenzan and Togi Makabe. And our G1 Climax B-Block matches were as follows. We had Michael Elgin defeating Yujiro Takahashi, Satoshi Kojima defeating Tomoaki Honma, Tomohiro Ishii defeating Yuji Nagata, Kazuchika Okada defeating Karl Anderson, and Shinsuke Nakamura defeating Hiroki Goto in the main event. Quite the card there. Some big, big names. Oh, England have just hit the bar! Holy hell. Delightful little lob there from Ajumang, who scored the late equaliser. Agonisingly close there. Arsenal legend. Well, I don't know if I call her a legend, but very useful player. I'm glad that she's getting some shine here and able to show what she can do. Oh, the referee's pointed to the spot! England have been awarded a penalty 3 minutes from the end of extra time. This is big. We could be on our way to another final here. I'm all over the place today. We're 10 minutes in. I've not even come close to talking about these matches. I think the attendances for this G1 are probably not going to be as high as we would like, but we are living in the post-Naito world, and unfortunately that is going to come with a slump in terms of the numbers. I think that's a reality we've all just got to deal with. And as long as New Japan are putting their best foot forward, telling compelling stories, pushing the right people, putting on good matches and good shows, I'm not really worried about the attendances. I'm not going to micro-analyze that and try and draw out wider trends from it. I just want the shows to be good. That's it. I'm a simple man. I'm not going to get bogged down in the numbers. And I must say, I thought today was a very, very good show indeed. We're back to single block show after two double block nights. I'm going to have to pause here while England take their penalty. It's Chloe Kelly to take it. Come on, Chloe. Oh, it's saved! But she's there for the rebound, and England have scored. They have taken the lead with a minute left to play. We might just have nicked this one here. Another Arsenal player coming up clutch for England, delivering the goods. You can thank us later, folks. Men's team might be an embarrassment, but the Arsenal women's team are not to be trifled with. Delivering the goods at club level, and the Arsenal English players delivering at an international level too. You love to see it. I thought we'd fucked it there. When that initial penalty got saved, a little bit of shit came out in my pants. But Chloe Kelly did not miss a trick. She was all over that, pounced on the rebound, cool as you like, to slot home and hopefully send England through to the finals. And we've got to give props here again. Teenager Michelle Ajumang making the difference in the quarterfinals and the semi-finals here. What an incredible story. I dare say she will become an Arsenal legend. But yes, back to the New Japan Pro Wrestling. So we're back to the single block show. And I do enjoy the rhythm of these shows. I sometimes find the double block shows a little bit overwhelming. But we got our undercard tags here. Great crowd tonight. Outstanding. I mean, the number might not be particularly impressive, but they brought the passion. They brought the volume. And it made a big difference to the show. Our opening match, we had Taiji Ishimori and Driller Maloney defeating Sho Makoto and Yoshihashi. Taiji Ishimori got the submission win over Kato, 6 minutes 30 seconds via bone lock. Of course, a preview of the upcoming Yoshihashi versus Driller Maloney match. And I'm not going to hand wave that. It might have been one that on paper might not have been too thrilling for a lot of people. But these are two guys fighting over top spot in the block. Not many people would have predicted that. Both guys on 4 points. And particularly interesting looking at Driller Maloney. Because if he wins that, which he might well do, he'll go 3-0. And his next match after that would be against Gabe Kidd, if I'm not mistaken, who, if he hasn't recovered from his injury in time, and my understanding of that from the sources that I've spoken to are that it's a game day decision. He's not out completely. It's a hyperextension of the knee, similar to what El Fantasmo had on the Soul Tour. And the call was made to take him off of the Zach match on night two, literally minutes before the show began. So I imagine a similar decision is going to be made. But if he is not able to compete and Driller Maloney picks up a forfeit win, then Driller will be 4-0 in the block. Something to keep an eye on. And it'll be a really interesting match because I think both wrestlers have a point to prove. Because for Driller, of course, it's his debut G1 climax. He's just moved up from junior heavyweight. And for Yoshihashi, he's a guy who's not been in the tournament for a while. He's lucky to be there. I've said before, if certain people had not left the company or were not hurt, you know, if we had guys like Naito or Jeff Cobb or Henare, Jake Lee, still there, still fit and healthy, Yoshihashi wouldn't be anywhere near this. But he is here. He's got the tap on the shoulder, and I bet he's got a point to prove. Anyway, this was a fun opener. Good fire from Sho Makoto. Very cool finish where Taiji Ishimori locked in the bone lock, and it just looked like Sho Makoto was about to get to the ropes, and I was thinking, oh, that would be quite an upset. I mean, not that he was going to win the match, but being able to get out of the bone lock and get the rope break, that would have been a pretty good achievement for a young lion. But then Taiji Ishimori just managed to roll him over again, get him away from the ropes and get the submission win. Second match was Yoshinobu Kanemaru. I'm going to pause there because England, the final whistle has gone and England are through to the finals. Get in there, girls. Sweet Caroline. Oh, oh, oh. So happy. Really is a golden era of women's football. Imagine that if England, reigning European champions, were to do it again, and we could have a year with Arsenal as European champions and England as European champions. I'd buy that for a dollar. Anyway, let's get back to the second match. We've got Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Ren Narita defeating Jado and El Fantasmo, 6 minutes and 8 seconds. So Kanemaru got submission win over Jado with a figure 4 leg lock. El Fantasmo discourse. That's going to be the culture war this summer. And I've heard just some incredibly tiresome takes from lots of different people. Some stuff that's up me chewing my own face off with annoyance at the stupidness coming out of people's mouths. Some people didn't like El Fantasmo versus Shota Umino. I wanted to like it. I had some problems with it. I thought it was inconsistent with the dynamics of the story they were trying to tell. If you listen to my Night 1 review, I'll go into more detail on that. In the Night 2 match, El Fantasmo versus Konosuke Takeshita, a lot of people absolutely loved that match. A lot of people didn't like it. Myself, I thought there were some serious issues with the pacing. I thought it started good, and then it was very boring for the most part, and then they just condensed all the high spots from their Korakuen Hall match into the last 3 minutes. Which was an issue for me. because there wasn't really time for things to settle, for things to breathe, for them to sell the moves properly. It was just like nothing, 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 nothing. Oh, here's a load of flips and flashing lights and flashy things, and then it was finished. A lot of people like that. I had issues with it. And I say this as, certainly in the Super J-Cast Discord community, the resident El Phantasmo defender. I didn't love it. I thought the pacing was poor. But now we have some very daft people saying things like people, essentially, that people are pretending not to like El Phantasmo. That there's people who secretly love his matches and are sitting there going, yeah, this is great. But then publicly or online being like, oh, no, actually, it's bad. Just pretending to dislike things. Come on, guys. Nobody is pretending anything. That is an insane thing to say. That is mental to say that anyone who dislikes El Phantasmo is pretending. And I like him, right? I'm saying this as a person who enjoys his wrestling more than most of the people that I talk to New Japan about. I'm not unhinged enough to declare that anyone who doesn't like a thing that I like is actually pretending not to like it, but secretly likes it. I'll tell you, everyone, I am tired of everyone pretending that they don't like Shenmue. Just be honest and admit that it's the greatest game ever made and that you all secretly love it. And you know what? I am the only trustworthy voice in the New Japan fandom when it comes to El Phantasmo. Because I like him. I have historically liked him, at least for the past few years. But I will provide detailed critical analysis where I think things don't work. And I think the matches for the past two nights didn't work for me. And I've explained why. And I hate to break it to some of you, but there is no objective truth in wrestling. There is no correct opinion. But having said that, the closest you will get is right here. From me. Joel, a guy who wants to like it, whose brain hasn't been completely poisoned by Amoresu slop, and we'll call it like it is. And unfortunately, that has systematically annoyed and alienated every corner of the wrestling fandom that has become aware of me. But that's the way it goes. I get rejected by the Super J-Cast Discord for liking El Phantasmo and Henare matches. I get rejected by the Deep Puro communities for liking New Japan. I'm hated and vilified by the AEW fans for daring to question the dynamics between the relationship between the two companies, to the extent where people work themselves up into a frenzy imagining how I might be upset about things that I've either not spoken about or things that I've actively praised. But guess what? I don't do this because I want my opinions to be pleasing to certain subsections of the fan base. There might have been a time when I cared about that, but I don't give a shit anymore. I'm not afraid to say stuff and be mocked for it and be on an island. It's happened before, it's going to happen again. Essentially, what I'm saying is I'm the only person that you can trust when it comes to El Phantasmo discourse. And I just don't think he has good instincts for this. There's a lot of flash, a lot of sizzle, but very little steak. Discussion popped up in our Discord, prompted by something that I heard another person say. And I won't say who said it or what it was, but it was a debate between who's a better wrestler, El Phantasmo or Callum Newman. And for my two cents, I think Callum Newman's a better wrestler. By a fairly comfortable distance at this point. And that's not for me saying that El Phantasmo is terrible, because like I said, I like El Phantasmo. But I do think Callum Newman is better than him. So we're going to get a lot of ELP discourse over this summer. And Ren Narita, he's the other side of that coin. Where the Shinihon Freaks, the Nujihadin, are praising his work in this G1 climax, but a lot of people in the Western fandom getting upset about that, saying that there's bias. Why is it that there are these people who are leaping to the defense of El Fantasmo at the thought of people not enjoying El Fantasmo matches as much as they did, but getting so upset when people are enjoying Ren Narita matches more than they are? Is it a color thing? Is it a color thing? Anyway, House of Torture gets the win here. Be interested to dig into the stats on how these preview tag outcomes lead to either similar success or opposite success in the block matches. Could be a project for Chris Samsa or Jay Michael. It's an excellent show that me and Jay Michael did on the Patreon. $10 feed, where we did an in-depth preview of the G1. So much good stuff in there. Jay Michael was having a look himself. And he said, and I quote, I hope he doesn't mind me quoting this, "Damn, you record a lot." Yes, I do. And I'm not just pumping out slop for quantity over quality's sake. I'm only going to record something on the Patreon if I think it's going to be good. And luckily, all of it's good. And there's a lot of it. So it's great value. Third match here. Rocky Romero and Konosuke Takeshita defeat Jacob Austin Young and Great O'Khan. Rocky got the pin over Jacob Austin Young, 7 minutes 30 seconds via roll-up. I'm also the resident Jacob Austin Young defender. I followed him since the Oriental Wrestling Entertainment days when he was running the J Cafe gimmick. And I'm imagining a future one day where Jacob Austin Young is going to make it into the Best of the Super Juniors. And much like other wrestlers sort of dig into a previous gimmick persona of theirs to give them extra strength during a decisive match, I want Jacob Austin Young to dip into and lean into his J-Cafe gimmick to help him overcome whoever it is, defeating Kosei Fujita in the semifinals of Best of the Super Juniors by having a swig of his latte before going for the whatever finishing move he happens to be doing at the time. Now, of course, this is a little preview for for Great O'Khan versus Konosuke Takeshita coming up. And I think that should be very good. Because whilst we have quite fairly, I think, accused Great O'Khan of sort of sleepwalking through matches, phoning it in from time to time, particularly matches where he's not winning, guys don't phone it in against Takeshita. I've heard that. I've heard that from wrestlers, that they get nervous when they're coming up to face Takeshita because they know how good he is and they know they're going to have to work their fucking socks off to keep up with him. And look, let's be real, Konosuke Takeshita is only here because these guys can't do their job. If they managed to get themselves over and become stars, then maybe they wouldn't have felt the need to give the call to Takeshita. And I think he shows a lot of these guys up because they show the fans and the viewing audience what New Japan are missing. He has that ace aura about him, which nobody else has in New Japan at this point. So I think some people are definitely feeling an inferiority complex next to Takeshita. As well they should. I hope it lights a fire under their ass. And I think that's what's going to happen tomorrow. There were some really tantalising grappling exchanges early on. Look, I think Great O'Khan is going hard tomorrow. I think it's going to be a good match. Not exactly a hot take, I know, for me to say that a Konosuke Takeshita singles match is going to be good. I'm sure he could probably drag me to a passable match. But I'm sure we will get full effort Great O'Khan. And the match will be all the better for it. The amount of work Rocky Romero gets across multiple promotions, it's really something, isn't it? Now we know why he's here. He's going to be Takeshita's tag partner. He's going to be the lost post for a lot of these tag matches. Or at least he should have been. Notice he picked up the win here. But I will say, it was a legitimately good match. There were some very creative sequences with all four guys. Nice finish with a Mahastral reversed. Surprise, surprise. Rocky's the winner. I'm only surprised Boss Man didn't book himself to be in the Grade 1 climax itself. Fourth match. Hartley Jackson and Zack Sabre Jr. defeat Katsuyo Murashima and Shota Umino. This was a legitimately good match. I was nearly going to say great there. It wasn't quite great. It was very, very good. Definitely worth going out of your way to watch. Don't skip it. Because we started this match with Big Jag, Hartley Jackson against Murashima, the big lad. It was really good. A real meat slapper. The crowd bloody loved it. They were really getting into it. Now, Zack Sabre Jr. got tagged in against Murashima and then immediately kicked Shota Umino in the face. So we're seeing more of those rough edges from Zack. Leaning into the heel tendencies a bit. Now, he's not full-blown heel. I don't think he's going to start cheating. But he can play in that space between what he was before and, you know, your sort of War Dogs, House of Torture end of the spectrum. Because I think in the long run, that will benefit whoever it is that dethrones him. And he's just more entertaining to watch that way. He's always been at his best when he's been a bit of a prick. Now, of course, the upcoming match, Shota Umino versus Zack Sabre Jr., that's going to be a rematch of the Wrestle Kingdom main event. But I think the G1 will suit Zack and Shota a lot better than Wrestle Kingdom main event. Having those lower expectations and the tighter time limit on it, I think is going to be a boon. And I know everyone is very quick and trigger happy to throw Shota Umino in the bin.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
But post-Wrestle Kingdom, I think he's actually having a very good year. At least with the bell to bell. Again, people are getting distracted by the window dressing, the outfit, the entrance theme, what he's doing on his way to the ring. I don't really care about that so much these days. I just want the wrestling to be good. I think he's having a good tournament so far and a good year. I think he's learned a lot from that Wrestle Kingdom main event. So I'm looking at this match tomorrow between Shota and Zack, and I'm quietly confident that it's going to be really good. And look, both of these guys will know how that Wrestle Kingdom match was received, and they will want to fix it. They'll want to make it right. Anyway, back to this tag match. Murashima, he is starting to make that connection with the fans. He's starting to win over the crowd. It was a great spot where he was thrown into the turnbuckle by Zack, and then he just launched himself at Zack, just like threw himself like a human torpedo. They got a big crowd pop. And then later on, he was up against Big Jag again. He was trying to lift him up, and the crowd were just really getting into that, just really willing him to be able to lift up Jackson. Some genuinely great sequences between the two of them. Like, seriously, don't skip it. And he finally, in the climactic moment, Murashima managed to land a power slam on Hartley Jackson. And the crowd just became unglued. And I also think it speaks volumes about the value that Hartley Jackson is adding to these undercard tag matches. Very useful guy to have around. Now, of course, Katsuyo Murashima didn't win, as he shouldn't. But these kind of matches are a really good benchmark for where the young lions are. And having guys like Hartley Jackson on the undercard, you can have these sort of stories in the mid-card, the undercard. These little mini-bosses, if you like. You know, Hartley Jackson isn't going to be in the G1. Probably doesn't want to be in the G1. But him being there as the undercard monster for young lions, I think is really fun, really interesting, compelling. Back to Shota, I do think the crowd are responding well to, if you look at this match, there were some sequences where Zack had him in submission moves and Shota struggling to get to the ropes, the crowd were responding to that. I think he's starting to win the fans back. Now, after the match finished, Zack attacked Shota after the bell, tied him up like a pretzel, slapping him on the face, shouting at him, Have you fucking changed, dipshit? Maybe there's a bit of real emotion behind that. I wonder how they feel about that match and who they blame for it. Probably themselves. But I bet there is some genuine emotion going into this match tomorrow. Both guys are going to be working very, very hard to right that wrong. I'm excited. Then we got Driller Maloney joining on commentary, joining Walker Stewart. And I thought he did an outstanding job. Thought he put over the wrestlers well. He gave really good insight into just little things like what's going on in the dojo system in general. Talked about what he might be doing during a particular point in a match. Putting over the intricacies of submission moves. You know, what's going on, what's being twisted and where it would be hurting. What certain wrestlers are doing behind the scenes. A lot of good stuff with Oleg Bolton. How a wrestler might be thinking or feeling. A lot of value added to the broadcast. He was really good, Driller Maloney. So, fifth match. We kick things off in the A block. Ryohei Oiwa defeated Callum Newman. 10 minutes, 24 seconds. The grip. And I like these kind of matches between two young guys. Just a little taste of the future. You sort of ask yourself, oh, you know, we're going to be seeing this on a bigger stage in a year, 2 years, 5 years. What could be the ceiling for Oiwa against Callum Newman feud? Again, Driller Maloney did really good work putting over the size of both men and what it takes to physically dominate each other. There was a lovely bit of shit talk before the bell between Oiwa and Newman. Some more of that, please. Again, I said Callum Newman, low-key, bit of a gobshite, and I like it. I don't want everyone to be nice and pleasant to each other. I want them to be pricks to each other. This is prize fighting. A really good story here, the pace of Newman versus the power of Oiwa. So Callum Newman was selling a lot during this match. He was selling his right knee. And I thought he did a very, very good job. A lot of swearing early on, but I thought he was very consistent with it. He was selling it after executing moves that use the knee. And just even little things like taking a bit longer to make a cover in those kind of situations. I think he's got good instincts, strong instincts for a young wrestler. And I'm impressed and excited by the progress he's making. He is learning quickly. And it shows. We saw a bit more swagger from Oiwa here. I think he needs to understand he's a big, muscular, good-looking young man. He's got the world at his feet. And I want him to act like it. Let's have a bit of cockiness. Bit of arrogance. And he showed a more dominant and ruthless streak here. He was going after Callum's knee. He was working it really well. And I like the suplex he does. He does a triple suplex chaos theory near fall. That was very good. What he does need to do, however, and I would say as a matter of urgency, he needs to lay in the strikes harder if he's going to be credible as a power guy. Honestly, he needs to take a page out of Shota Umino's book, especially with the fact that he uses the lariat as his finisher. Just fucking lay it in, my guy. If you're going to lariat a dude, I want to see the sweat flying. And I want to hear the big meaty slap. When that move lands, it should sound like a baseball bat hitting a side of beef. But Oiwa's strikes don't look like they could crack an egg. And that's a problem. He needs to tighten that up. So I'll give this 3.25 stars. Was a good match. It would have been higher if he could land a hit with any kind of impact. Sixth match. Oleg Bolton defeats Hiroshi Tanahashi. 9 minutes 50 seconds. Kamikaze. Very good match again. A lot of grappling to start. I was wondering, you know, is this going to be the story of the match? Is it just going to be a grappling match? Are they going to kind of take it easy on Tanahashi? But no, it was not long before Oleg was ragdolling Tanahashi across the ring. The El Presidente took some big bumps here. He ate some big meaty chops from the big bear paws of Oleg Bolton. And they extracted maximum drama out of these just little power struggles. Like, there's one moment where Tanahashi's trying to land an Irish whip. Oleg's holding onto the rope and then Tanner just slaps him right in the face to break his grip. The worry is, when wrestlers get old and are starting to wind things down, is that they don't look credible anymore. And it ruins and it shatters the suspension of disbelief because they no longer are moving or wrestling like a person who looks like they're hurting the opposition. But it was not the case here. For example, his senton. That looks like it legit hurts. Looks like it absolutely flattened Oleg, drove the wind out of him. Tanahashi can still land a German suplex. Suplex has still got snap, still looks like it hurts. Like, whatever you might say about Tanahashi, still has stuff in his locker that looks good. That stuff that looks like it hurts and could put away an opponent. So we're not into the stretch in the realms of credibility yet. And I still buy Tanahashi being able to wriggle his way out of something and lock in an inside cradle and steal a win. Maybe I'm grading it on a curve just because I love Hiroshi Tanahashi. But is Hiroshi fucking Tanahashi? We're going to grade on a curve for anyone. It should be him. But I don't think I am. I think this was a legitimately good match. I'm enjoying his G1 a lot more than I thought I would. I thought I'd be watching it through my fingers thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, he looks terrible. Should have retired. Why is he in the G1? But I'm not. I think he's been really good so far. Even if he might be like Blanka from the Street Fighter movie, the Jean-Claude Van Damme one, between the matches, locked in some sort of hyperbaric chamber, pumped full of glowing fluorescent chemicals and steroids, forced to watch videos to hype him up for his matches, videos of, I don't know, war, pestilence, tragedy, AEW programming. I jest. Crowd were really into this. They were living and dying by every move. Case in point, there was a closing sequence where Tanahashi went up for the high fly flow. And you know that could go either way, because Oleg was on his feet and either he lands the high fly flow and gets the win, but Oleg catches Tanahashi and there's just like this noise from the crowd, like a growl, like, oh, and then a roar as he hoists him up on his shoulders and then flattens him with a kamikaze. Just really, the crowd really enhanced my enjoyment of this match. And it was a great match. Fucking great. Perfect. Like the best you could hope for between these two guys at the stages of their career. 4 stars. And a nice show of respect afterwards for the former tag champions. I think they were former tag champions together. You can never really be sure with the Never Six-Man titles. Someone could say to me just 3 wrestlers at random and tell me they were former Never Six-Man champions and I'd be like, yeah, okay, that sounds plausible. Very, very good indeed from Tanahashi and Bolton. 8th match. A block. Again, it was Sanada defeating Evil. 6 minutes, 33 seconds by Samson Clutch. Well, I was quite bullish on this match going into it. I think both of these guys have been good in this G1. Forget what the amorous brains might tell you. I'm telling you, if there were heels in AEW doing the exact same shit that Evil and Sanada and Ren Narita have been doing, like move for move, they could be copying it exactly, they would be falling over themselves telling you what great heel work it is. And it was quite remarkable when the graphic flashed up on the screen, Evil versus Sanada. There was real excitement from the crowd. They're like, oh, they couldn't wait for this. I had such a big grin on my face because just based on what I'd seen on night one and night two, I knew this was going to be good. Both guys have been working hard and they look like they're enjoying themselves. And I think that counts for a lot. You can tell when they're not enjoying and they don't believe in what they're doing, when they're phoning it in and it's just the same shit every night, but that's not the case here. I think both guys are working hard to come up with creative stuff. So Nada's putting in a shift. Evil's changed things up a bit. And I was cackling when we saw the latest Sanada outfit. The fishnet two-piece, the pink sunglasses. This man is fucking hilarious. And there have been so many misses with him with the various iterations of his gimmick. But he's finally nailed it when he stopped giving a shit what other people think and leans in to be this anti-comedy fucking weirdo that he clearly is. He's like Zach from Dead or Alive. if anyone's played that game. I'm telling you, this is not an identity crisis. I'm convinced that this is Sanada, Seiya Sanada, in his purest, most authentic form. This is Sanada wearing clothes that he likes, coming out to music that he likes, doing shit that he likes. And I dig it. I just laugh when I see him now. Even his stupid face just makes me crack up. So I'm rubbing my hands together with glee, waiting to see what shit Evil and Sanada would do here. And just howling as they're repeatedly stopping each other, foiling each other's shenanigans, pointing at them, being like, ah, I see what you are about to do there. I see you. You are going to cheat. It's like my fucking kids would do, like when one of them's about to steal a bit of chocolate from the other one, and they're both looking at me like, ah, oh, daddy, look over here. There's a crime in progress. Even the bit with where they were doing a handshake, and then Sanada tried to kick Evil, and Evil caught the kick. And his eyes went all big and he's like, ah, oh, he's wagging his finger at Sanada. That just had me in stitches. And there was just some real funny shit here. Taking in turns, wiping out the announcers. Kanemaru putting on the referee shirt. The crowd absolutely loving it. So Kanemaru's in there making sure they keep it nice and clean. They actually wrestled a pretty good reversal sequence with Kanemaru in charge of the match. And then Marty drags him out of the ring, claims his shirt back. Evil getting a near fall from Marty Asami pushing over Sanada. Wish he got the pinfall there. I wonder what they'd have put up on the website. Sanada pinfall, 5 minutes, 27 seconds via Marty Asami push. And I'll say it, I think this was the best singles match. Certainly the most enjoyable one. Reminded me a bit of the Taka Michinoku versus Taichi Best of the Super Juniors match from 2017. Not quite at that level, but still very, very funny. 3 stars. 8th match. Taichi defeats David Finlay. 13 minutes, 35 seconds. Black Mephisto. The overwhelming thing that occurred to me watching this match, David Finlay is such an underrated seller. He's such an unselfish worker. Just at the start of this match, just even small things like Taichi landed a back kick, just caught him in the belly. And he's like jumping up and wriggling about because it's so painful. Or him writhing around in agony after the back drop, pounding the mat in frustration. Or flying out of the ring from the Taichi elbow. It took David Finlay about a minute of wrestling in this match to make Taichi look like a killer. To set up the narrative of this match that Taichi is more powerful than David Finlay and Finlay's going to have to use his brains to get the advantage here. And there's a real sense of underlying desperation in a lot of what Finlay does that makes it feel authentic. Like the moment where Taichi was about to land a backdrop when they were ringside and Finlay's like, no, 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 like desperately trying to wriggle out of it. He knows that if that lands, then he's toast. And then manages to land on his feet. He just pounces on that split second of uncertainty to shove Taichi into the ring post and take control of the match. And look, the recipe's clear here. It's a simple formula. Taichi, great underdog babyface. Finlay, great at heel control segments. News at 11, this match rocked. And Finlay, he's not a coward like Jay White. He will, at the start of a match, he will go toe-to-toe with a guy because he fundamentally believes that he is tougher and stronger and can win in a fight, but he can adjust on the fly if the game plan isn't working and sees any reasonable opportunity that presents itself. Not by breaking the rules, but just by being a good strategist. And when you see him snatching those chances, it feels very real. It's always so well executed and he just sells it with the mannerisms and like the flailing limbs and the desperation on his face to make it seem like a struggle. And that makes his opponents look good as well. It was an incredible spot about halfway through here where Taichi hit the backdrop on Finlay over the apron. I mean, Finlay, he takes some wild bumps for his opponents. Always sells them like death. So all of these factors I've talked about, all of that combined to make an incredible closing stretch to cap off what was already a terrific match. And it's that flailing desperation of Finlay making every single reversal look like a life or death struggle. both of these guys landing the cleanest strikes, the noises that just crack and snap across the arena. Both guys having an arsenal of moves that just look like they put most normal human beings into the hospital. It's just an absolute joy to watch. In front of a red-hot crowd who are living and dying by everything. Tai Chi, he might be the most underrated babyface wrestler. Finlay, he might be the most underrated heel-leaning wrestler. But they're not going to be underrated here on the Super J-Cast. Not on my watch. 4.5 stars. This is my shit. Ninth match, main event. Yota Tsuji defeating Yuya Uemura. 16 minutes, 56 seconds. Gene Blaster. And look at these match times. When we get into the block matches. 10 minutes, 9 minutes, 6 minutes, 13 minutes, 16 minutes. So breezy. They're not dragging stuff out for the sake of it. They're not thinking, well, it's semi-main event. Main event, it's got to go 25 minutes. It doesn't. These matches were all perfectly paced. There were not a single one of that finish thinking, oh, I wish they'd gone for another 5 minutes. It was perfect. So I love to see them being a bit more sensible about the timings of these. Less is more. Especially when your attention span is as fucked as mine is. So we get back to Tsuji versus Yuya. And I just noticed one thing during the opening of this match, how the camera pans to the lights when Yuya does his pose, because he's the sun now. I don't know how long they've been doing it for, but it's a very nice cinematic touch. I appreciate the symbolism, even though I don't really know what it means. What does it mean that he's the sun? Does that mean you shouldn't stare at him? Or are you going to go blind? Now let me pose a question. Does Yuya Uemura have the best arm drag in the business? Yes. Yes, he does. I love this guy. I just love how he does the basics, smooth as silk, and takes pride and confidence in that. He knows what he's doing, and he believes in it. He has absolute conviction in his sort of minimalist approach to wrestling, in executing the basics with flair and perfection, and he will not change it up. I respect that. And it's always a great foil for Yota Tsuji's more reckless and flashy style. I remember reviewing their first singles matches as Young Lions for Voices of Wrestling back in 2018. And I always knew that they would have a great rivalry and be on a bigger stage. And it'd be a story with many chapters. So I've got a big soft spot for these two. I always enjoy their matches. I really like their chemistry. They write beautiful prose together where it's like Yuya's providing the words and Yota Tsuji's providing the punctuation at the end of it throughout. And there were some big exclamation marks here. That chop from Tsuji where you could feel Yuya's soul leaving his body just echoing out through the arena like a fucking gunshot. And is there any more sincere an expression of the dynamics and the contrast between these two men whereby the Gene Blaster is countered into an arm drag? I love that spot so much. And they lean into the history, of course, in this match last year where Yuya picked up his injury after doing a frog splash. They lean into that and he missed the frog splash. Really good callback spot. Extracted the necessary drama from that. Another thing Yuya does really well in his matches is that beautiful struggle for the Kanuki suplex, the deadbolt suplex, where Tsuji's just desperately trying to wrench his way out. He's trying to headbutt his way out of the overhooks. There's a little false start where he sort of jumps up and he's like, he's tried to launch him once and not quite worked. And as they tell this new chapter to their stories, maybe if we're putting on our WeWork stiff hats, just a little tacit admission by Yuya that he needs to tap into a bit more grit, a bit more flashbang wallop, what a video. The moment where he throws in his own headbutt, he takes a leaf out of Tsuji's book. And where he punched Tsuji in the jaw to counter the Gene Blaster. And a tremendous closing stretch here with the Kanuki's countered into a jumping knee. We had the Tanahashi tribute with the Dragon Suplex. Because, of course, you know, a lot of people believe Yuya Uemura is the spiritual successor to Hiroshi Tanahashi. And he can do that without having Tanahashi giving him his moves and the names of his moves. And Uemura finally overcoming his fear by landing that frog splash successfully, but still not enough. I bet on that. I was convinced that was going to be the finish. And so we went for another one. That one was countered into a short-range gene blaster. And then a follow-up gene blaster countered into a Hurricane Rana this time, the mother of all near falls. And then a final gene blaster in the chamber, the last one, bang, finally puts down Yuya. And every time these guys meet, they build another layer, another wrinkle in the story to keep us guessing, playing into the drama of how the previous matches have ended. Little twists on that, little subversions. That's what we love. Terrific main event. And look, can someone explain to me why we can't give the mega push to either of these guys? What is missing? Someone tell me what is missing from Yota Tsuji or Yuya Uemura. What are we waiting for? What mystical signs from the heavens are we in anticipation of until we can put the big boy belt on one of these guys? They're not getting any younger. They're both in the 30s now. And they tick all the boxes for me. All they're missing is that push where they can beat a string of top guys to cement themselves as the number one in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Do it. For God's sake, just pick a guy and do it. Book them like a star and people will treat them like stars. They will behave like stars. Do not sit around with your thumb up your ass waiting for these guys to become Kazuchika Okada, Prime Okada, or Prime Tetsuya Naito, or Prime Tanahashi. Sometimes you have to take some risks. Four and a quarter stars. Great match. Great show. Top to bottom, just flew by, an absolute snack of a show. And a very strong start to the G1 climax, exceeding expectations for me. Hope it continues. Breezy matches, hot crowd, just textbook G1 climax. Kind of G1 climax show that gives me life. So let's visit the standings then in A block. Starting to get a little bit of the priority booking, although I shouldn't complain about that. So they've only had three nights so far. So I'm not going to start moaning about that yet. But we have Oleg Boltin, Evil, Taichi, Oiwa, and Tsuji on 4 points. Finlay, Newman, Uemura, Tanahashi, and Sanada on 2 points. First place, favourite match of the tournament, still just by a whisker. Taichi versus Yuya from night 2. Second place, Taichi versus Finlay from night 3. Third place, again, just by a hair, I'm going to go Tsuji versus Uemura from night 3. Fourth place, Ren Narita versus Zach from night 1. Fifth place, Oleg Boltin versus Yuya from night 1. For the record, sixth place, I've got Taichi versus Tanahashi night 1, Sanada versus Finlay from night 2, and then Driller versus Shota from night 2. I should probably just keep it to a top 5 for now. So just forget those last 3. The show coming up tomorrow, Wednesday, July 23rd from Niigata. We got Toriano and Oleg Boltin versus Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Sanada. Sho Mikoto and Yuya Uemura versus Jacob Austin Young and Callum Newman. Masatora Yasuda and Taichi versus Dick Togo and Evil. Daiki Nagai and Yota Tsuji versus Hartley Jackson and Yohei Oiwa. Katsuya Murashima and Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Gedo and David Finlay. Then we have our B-block matches, Yoshihashi versus Driller Maloney. As I mentioned, those are the only two guys at the top of B-block with 4 points. They're the only guys with perfect records so far. So they're fighting to see who can maintain and be the only wrestler in the G1 with a perfect record. Seventh match, El Phantasmo versus Ren Narita. Ah, the discourse match. Delicious. I really hope that it's good. I want to enjoy both of these guys. But then, if it is a really good match, all of the people on the Super J-Cast Discord are going to say it was Ren carrying ELP to a good match. And all the people on the other side of the argument are going to be saying it was ELP carrying Ren to a good match. But if you want to find out who is actually responsible for it being good or bad, you'll have to get your fucking wallet out and sign up for the $10 tier on the Super J-Cast Patreon to get my review of G1 Climax Night 4. Eighth match, Great Okan versus Konosuke Takeshita. As I said, I think Okan will have his working boots on. I think that one's going to be really good, even though I've been disappointed by Okan's output so far in this tournament. Ninth match is supposed to be Shingo Takagi versus Gabe Kidd. We'll see if Gabe Kidd is cleared to wrestle. Again, that's going to be a game day decision. They will be making that call as late as possible. And the 10th match, main event, Shota Umino versus Zack Sabre Jr. And as I said, I'm bullish on that one. I think that is going to be very, very good. So that is it. That's my review of Night 3. If you've enjoyed this and you're not already subscribed to the Patreon, do consider. There's a lot more where this came from. Nobody has given you this quality of analysis and understanding of the product and the storylines and appreciation of the finer details. No one does match analysis like me. No one's as good at it as I am. Nobody else can break down in intricate detail why a match is successful or why a match has failed as well as I do. And coming from a place of good faith, I love New Japan Pro Wrestling. I really want it to be good. And if it's good, I'll celebrate that. If it's shit, I'll tell you it's shit and I'll tell you why it's shit. That's why I'm the best New Japan analyst in this business. So again, if you've enjoyed this, get your fucking wallet out. You can go and listen to my reviews of Night 1 and Night 2, which are as good as this. And you will be first to receive the reviews for Night 4 and Night 5 and Night 6 and Night 7 and Night 8 and Night 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, that entire tour. You are going to get my wisdom, my razor sharp insight. No one else on my level. I'm going now, bye!
Hello everyone, my name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Every other Monday, we're coming at you with news, show reviews, and previews of upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're just getting into the scene or you've seen it all, this is the show for you.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and wherever you get your audio.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.